presented here for your consideration the notion that the ordinary people surrounding you every day, on the street, the bus, at the post office, or the trendy evening venue, are, in fact, far from ordinary. That these men, women, and others form their own splinter groups behind closed doors, and that these micro-societies engage in activities often more obscure than fiction. Welcome to the Subculture.
Yes, hello, and welcome to the Subculture podcast. I'm your host, and actually just two raccoons in a trench coat, Andrew.
And I'm Eldritch Abomination, Joe.
From the depth, he rises!
Here I am, just to see you.
It's lovely to hear you, Eldritch Abomination.
For what have you summoned me here today, Andrew?
Oh, mighty one, your presence is required for the content of speedrunning video games.
Speedrunning video games. All right, then. So, what is speedrunning? Start with definitions, start with preconceptions. What is this?
Like, what are people here to listen to? This is a community that will help you nitro your way through absolutely anything you give them, I think.
What is nitro?
You know, like a nitro boost on a car.
Ah, that's cool. That's very 90s. Very Need for Speed Underground.
Glad my references are still up to date as ever.
As up to date as they'll ever be.
I've actually got a bit of experience in speedrunning, I have to tell you.
Sexual encounters with women doesn't count.
Oh, he anticipated where I was going.
Did I? But it still doesn't count.
I win!
Top of the leaderboard.
Of loneliness. Preconceptions first, preconceptions. Before we define what speedrunning is, if I said to you speedrunning video games, what would you think of that straight off the bat?
So this is a topic that I brought to the table. So it's been difficult for me to cast my mind back to when I wasn't aware of this and what I would have thought about it then. But I don't think I had any preconception of this at all until one day I saw a video on YouTube about someone speedrunning Doom, and then suddenly it all fell into place immediately. From the video, it became clear what it was about and introduced me to the concept at the same time. So today I've had a bit of a preconceptions about the kind of people that would engage in this, but about the pastime or calling or art form that is speedrunning, I don't have any preconceptions to share.
Art form.
And yourself?
Mine come from, I mean, the title kind of explains it, speedrunning. There's not a lot of room for misunderstanding there, I guess, especially if you pair it with video games.
Listen, it's a Ron Seal hobby, yeah? It does exactly what it says on the tin. Yeah. Speedrunning, you're running at speed, video games, bang tidy, son.
Enough said. End show there. Roll credits.
Bish, bash, and bosh.
I knew a guy in university who did some of this, or he... It started off that he told us that he was really into Sonic the Hedgehog 2D games. He thought they were much better than modern video games. So he would play them kind of over and over, and I guess that was him. He was already training for what he knew he was going to be heading up to.
He wasn't actually going to make it as a chemist then.
Funnily enough, he wasn't in university with us. He was just dating a girl who was.
I was going to say, did he actually manage to get his degree?
He was actually probably the coolest of us all. He was just like a phenomenally charismatic guy, believe it or not.
I wonder what became of him.
I can tell you what became of him. Well, up until about 2009, but he shot for and got a Guinness World Record in speedrunning Sonic the Hedgehog games. So his name's James Richards. You can look him up online. He practiced over and over and over. He applied for, and I think he went to an event like in a hotel where it was independently judged by a Guinness World Record book adjudicator. And he managed to reach the end of the game / complete Sonic the Hedgehog 3 in the fastest time, giving him a world record at the time of 49 minutes and 17 seconds on the 9th of August 2008 to complete the entire game. And he also held the record for fastest completion time for the first level of Sonic 2, which is named Emerald Hills, and he managed to do that in 22 seconds. Although, like many things in speedrunning, I suspect that didn't last long, and he was beaten by a single second by someone in 2009.
His record was destroyed by an entire second.
Yeah.
That's big in speedrunning.
But that's quite funny that the person that beat him was also from ass end of nowhere in the UK, and this guy was from a small town in Kent as well. So UK speedrunners big on Sonic, maybe. Unjustified claim right there.
Sonic specialists. It's all of the local hedgehog life that we have. So, you know, we've got an advantage, a racial understanding of the hedgehog that translates.
There's just something about seeing one shuffle aimlessly through your garden and mostly end up as roadkill that makes you think, I want to paint that blue, stick some trainers on it and see how fast it can fucking go.
I'd go at the speed of sound, collecting rings of all things, not bread soaked in milk, but yeah.
They want to do something with those hedgehog rings.
So this guy was a speedrunner. He was, and when was this that you came across him? I mean, what, 2006?
I finished my degree in 2009, so yeah, I would have known him from 2006 to 2009.
So let's have ourselves a little bit of a formal definition in that case. So the one I've got is, speedrunning is completing a video game or specific objective within a game or a level as fast as possible, often using deep mechanical knowledge, glitches, or game-breaking strategies to optimize time. Basically, most of the time, it's get to the end as fast as possible by any means necessary, by fair means or foul, but the means are agreed on. So there's a sort of internal rule set that you're not allowed to break because it's considered cheating. Some things are considered fine, certain glitches, other things are not, which I guess we'll discuss more of.
The overarching term, speedrunning, is the act of playing a video game or a section of a video game with the goal of completing it as fast as possible. Absolutely spot on. And then as soon as you get into that, they're going to break it down into categories, subcategories, rules, what counts, what doesn't. I mean, it often involves, like you say, planned routes and sequences and Easter eggs inside the game that are supposed to be there or not. The biggest two categories I saw within it when I was looking through it are TAS, which stands for tool-assisted speedrunning, which would be kind of almost like automation tools. You would put a sequence of inputs into a virtual controller that would execute them for you, and therefore you take out any kind of human error. And the other grouping, which I think people actually do that they want to do competitively, is RTA, which stands for real-time attack. So that's an actual human playing the game themselves in the fastest possible time or with a certain goal in mind.
So my understanding of tool-assisted speedruns is that they're generally not as prestigious and they're generally used in order to see what's actually physically possible. What's possible in the game if you make perfect inputs? Whereas being a human, you're obviously chasing that perfection, but you're not going to be able to get it every time. So the tool-assisted speedrun can give you a kind of a ceiling through which you know you're not going to be able to break, unless you come up with a different strategy. But I don't think tool-assisted speedruns are the meat of where the culture centers itself on.
No, I think if we're talking about a human subculture, it's going to be the human element that are wanting to, you know, smash their head against this particular brick wall until it breaks. And that will be the real-time attack, the people that are doing it in real time and want to upload recorded proof of doing so and get the E-peen of being the fastest online. And some of the original games are kind of great for this because they've got time limits. You've got leaderboards on everything from early Pac-Man and Galaxian and stuff. Games are kind of built with a competitive headset in mind. So speedrunning maybe just takes that to the next level.
Some of the earliest speedrunning came from original Doom, which was released in 1993, and Quake, and these games. And Doom, when you finished a level, it would give you how long it took you to complete it, the number of secrets that you collected, the number of secrets you visited, the number of items you collected. And it was kind of tailor-made to you turn that into a competition. And obviously in the 90s, the internet was only just beginning to become accessible. We didn't have broadband. We only had 56K connections. So how you see speedrunning now with videos on YouTube as evidence was totally non-existent back then. And speedrunning was an incredibly small community of very dedicated people. And they shared runs using these things called demo files, which are tiny 6 kilobyte files that recorded all of the inputs that you put into the Doom game. And then someone else could run it on their own computer. And that's how the community operated back then.
I did come across that same summary, and it was quite interesting. It was written on readonlymemory.com, and they must have done an interview with John Romero, who's one of the lead designers at ID Games that came up with Doom and Wolfenstein 3D before it. And he was telling them that Wolfenstein 3D kind of kicked off this culture around 1992, 1993, because that's the game where they put in par times on the screen. And those par times were his own personal best of running through the level. You know, this is the designer, this is one of the guys that built this game. But what he noticed was that building a level for Wolfenstein 3D was really, really hard. But even in the early internet, people were sharing how they'd broken down the file and managed to get to the source code to make custom levels and to find exploits in how to run these games quicker. So when they came to build Doom after Wolfenstein 3D, they were like, we want to make this more open source so that people can do this more easily. They kept the PAR times in, and that's why it's, I think it's a command level input to be able to record a demo that you've mentioned that's only a few kilobytes long, but it's inbuilt functionality in the game. They kind of spawned this themselves. They built this game with modders and speedrunners in mind.
They saw it coming and they kept the door open for people to keep enjoying that, which is really cool. And there's something in Doom, as the community calls it technology, as the technology progresses, which is a combination of strategy and glitches that have been found, or certain things that you can pull off in certain levels, which aren't immediately obvious. Some of these rely on quirks of the Doom game engine, and if they fix these in later versions, then it would just kind of destroy the speedrunning aspect of it. But back in the 90s, once a game was released, that was pretty much it. There wasn't really a culture of updating back then. You know, years later, you might get a patch on the CD for something. But like console games, once it's in a cartridge, that was it. It was set, and the glitches were there forever. But in modern games, when something might get patched every 6 months, they have to divide it into categories, because sometimes the exploits get fixed and patched over. So the categories kind of split again down to, okay, this is patch 1.15 that we're running for this one, and 1.16 and above is a different category.
And there's patches that will specifically almost target speedrunners because they don't want these exploits in the game to let you to go through cutscenes that you shouldn't really want to skip, or input codes that you shouldn't know that kind of penalize the player for trying to do it and therefore make it harder for speedrunners. But I think what you mentioned a minute ago about the subdivisions and different categories in speedrunning is also quite interesting, and how they divide themselves up. So it's not just how fast can you get to the end of a level. They could set arbitrary goals or certain challenges within the game itself. But some of the more common ones are any percentage, which means getting to the end of the stage or the end of the entire game as fast as possible without any qualifiers. Maybe they might say with glitches or without glitches, if there's certain exploits in the game that you shouldn't be exploiting for that particular time boundary. There's 100% completion, which is like fully completing every objective in the game, every hidden object, every collectible, something like that. How quickly can you blitz the entire game? There's low percentage, which is the exact opposite. How quickly can you get through the game almost naked, you know, no power-ups, the minimal amount of collections done. And then like glitchless or no major glitches are starting to get the differentials between, okay, you can jump through the wall at this point, but it's obviously a part of the game that's not supposed to be there. So for a glitchless run, you won't do that.
My favorite game mode, game category is pacifist, where you beat the game without killing any enemies. That can be particularly punishing.
Sorry, I don't... What is that word? I've never heard it before.
Pacifist.
Nope, don't know it.
You've not heard the word?
No. I can't walk my dog in pacifist mode.
Clearly you were built for war, Andrew. That's such a novel idea. And some levels, it's not even possible. Sometimes, if you manage to do it at all, then you get the record. But going back, certain games have a culture of, we just want you to play the game as intended, but fast. And other games seem to have developed a culture of exploits and glitches are totally fine. We embrace them. And it's not really clear which game would fall under which category. Just something that happens.
Some of them, I think, are like some of the ones that speedrunners choose are quite peculiar. Some of them make sense. Like Doom, it was a brand new physics engine when it came out. And in fact, the mathematical algorithm that goes into the movement and the timing behind Doom kind of breaks computing if you change it. There's quite a fascinating YouTube mini series of videos on it where they change the timing into more conventional computer coded timings, and the game falls apart really, really quickly. So they made that engine specifically for that thing. You have a certain speed when you're moving forward, and you've got a certain speed when you're moving sideways. But if you move diagonally, you kind of get the peak of both of those. That's how speedrunners think and do. Like, this is the way to go.
It sums the vectors and you go faster.
Yeah.
And then you can combine that with a wall running glitch, which for some reason on north-south walls means you run a little bit faster when you're touching, but not east-west ones. So you start planning your route around which north-south walls can I use combined with this sideways movement. And then there's another level of glitch-inducingness. If you're a real super nerd, it's called SR50.
Is that inside Doom specifically?
That's inside the Doom engine specifically, where you can confuse it with a number of inputs. I think it involves turning at the same time as strafing, except you have the inputs cancel out, so you're actually not turning, but it adds your momentum as if you were turning, so you go a tiny little bit faster still, 10% faster, which normally no one cares about.
Can you imagine what that would look like as a real person? Like you just hurricaning through an environment of absolute chaos, but you're spinning around and going, I'm faster.
Is this guy okay? He's got a shotgun. Everyone should leave if you can outrun him, which you can't.
I think some of the most fun ones to watch, and that's probably just my pixel-loving perspective, is stuff like Super Mario Brothers from 1985, like the old-school games, where jumping at a certain point, you'll instead of going through a warp pipe, you'll end up running across it and into a secret hidden room where you can then... But those are Easter eggs inside the game. They made a warp zone where you can go down one of three pipes that will take you either into the third, fourth, or fifth level ahead. And that's the most speed-efficient way to get there, is exploiting a glitch through the wall, because even some more amateur players like me know that if you on the second level, if you stand on a platform that rises all the way up to the top of the level, you can run along most of the top of it where the scorecard is and then drop down to that at the end. But apparently that's not fast enough for a speedrunner. Skipping out most of the game like that is not quick enough for them. You have to be able to jump through a wall in a pixel perfect timing to be a speedrunner.
Yep, that sounds about right. Well, you're clearly a casual, no offense. They're using technology far beyond your comprehension.
Well, technology is an interesting point about it, because usually, as you said, per game, there's rules around what is acceptable and what's not for a speedrun. But this is, I guess, according to the accepted subculture of speedrunning. And speedrun.com kind of claims to be the definitive leaderboard for this community right now, is what I came across.
They've got the right name for it.
They got the domain locked in.
Yeah, ain't no one digging them out of that.
But even the early internet, as you said, sharing files that were built from Doom engines on a couple of kilobytes. And Doom itself was what? Let me check my notes.
Came about a fucking
4 megabytes.
Yeah.
But if you can record your demo on a couple of kilobytes and then load it up, even a modem's going to manage that.
What's so insane about this is we take data for granted these days, totally. So obviously we've got little SD cards, which I've got a 2 terabyte micro SD card, which is 2,000 times bigger than the best hard drive I could afford 20 years ago in terms of capacity and, you know, a thousandth of the mass. But to put Doom back in the day into perspective, a high-resolution photo that covers your screen is, I don't know, 10 megabytes, something like that. And this entire game, Doom, occupied less than half of that information to create this.
Like, isn't a physics insane? Engine... Music, if you can call it that, like input capabilities, everything.
Now I can take a badly lit selfie of my naked ass cheeks, send it to some unfortunate woman or man, and I've just completely... My use of that level of data is so offensively banal. If I knew what I was doing, I could have coded a game inside it instead and actually provided some value to the universe.
Yeah, firstly, all of us would appreciate you send us less of those pictures, thank you. And secondly,
it's my hobby.
Doom probably occupies as much space of two of your ass pimples.
Exactly. If you really want to put in perspective how fucking wasteful we are with data and pictures and ass pimples, then yeah, that's just, it's always worth remembering. And modern games have ballooned way, way bigger than that, because people don't need to be clever with the code anymore because computers are so much faster.
We're straying into old man moans about technology's territory.
Yeah. Going back to what you said about the category completed 100%, every level, every item, every achievement, every boss fight, every enemy dead, what does that look like when you're playing a game through? Because some games take 15 hours to complete or longer as a casual. If you tried to go and get every item, even if you knew what you were doing and where to go, we're suddenly talking, this is an inhuman amount of time would go into this, right? Even just doing one run.
Some of the ones that, as I said, the choice of game seems to be kind of weird for me. One of the big ones in the online community seems to be Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, which came out in the Nintendo 64 cartridge-based game. Running through it naturally, people were managing to get their runs down to 5-ish hours to complete the game. That's not 100% completion. That's like running through the main storyline before an army of tech nerds behind them, and we'll get to those guys, before and girls, before they found the glitches.
And girl.
Yeah, just the one who brought the fucking cakes. It's not completing the entire game, finding every collectible. But that means sitting down and running through this game in one go in a 5-hour session still. And that was the record. That's a big commitment, even if it doesn't seem fast for a game that might take you 20, 40 hours otherwise.
That's a full working day, lad. It's more than a full working day if you're me.
The joy of being a salesman. Since people have got down the exploits and, oh, if you do this particular set of moves, if you run backwards at this point and actually do this in this dungeon, it's now coming in at like under 20 minutes, I think about 17 minutes.
That's insane. Isn't there some glitching the cutscenes or warping where you can trick the game into warping you to the wrong place and you skip out massive amounts of the game? Is that Ocarina of Time? It could be any game.
It could be any of them. So if we're talking about actual individual games, just as an example, you probably played Skyrim, right? One of the Elder Scrolls games.
Yes.
You know, it's a massive game. It's deep. There's so much content. There's storylines on top of storylines everywhere. It's just huge. I watched one of the speedruns for that was a Kill Nazim speedrun. And this is a kind of random character in the first actual city that you get to, I would say.
So he's not a boss. He's just some random... Yeah, yeah. Some bro.
How quickly can you get to Nazim in the game and kill him?
And fucking shank him.
But he's in, if you've played it, he's in, what's it called, White Run? The first proper city that you get to. Now, there's a couple of dragon fights between you and them. There's at least one dungeon where you have to escape from the first place that you're held captive. I would say it's got to be at least an hour of a casual gamer's time to get out through past that to get to the first city, I would guess. How long do you think speedrunners can get to Nazima and kill him?
I don't know, man. Any number between 10 seconds and 10 minutes is believable.
You're not far off. 1 minute, 57 seconds.
How?
There was a bit of this kind of open, close your save game and stuff. But it was like, as soon as you have control of the game and something smashes through a wall to the right of you, where you would normally run away from it, you like jump over its head and then just run off into the woods and through a cave. And then you kind of get warped halfway across the map by some terrible glitch of physics that you're falling through the air. You land in this city and you just go down and set him on fire or something. 1 minute, 57 seconds.
Kick him in the shins with your unarmored peasant shins.
Yeah, yeah. You're still wearing a sackcloth at this point.
Wrap that round his throat and heave on it until you get the achievement. Great. What a way for Nazim to go, poor guy.
I mean, he's a nothing character, but still. I saw some other videos of that one in particular that were talking about main quest being fully completed with glitches in an hour and 5 minutes. Like, I'm probably not out the first cave in an hour and 5 minutes.
So, these longer runs especially, what happens when you're aiming for a 5-hour time, say, and you make a critical blunder at around 4 hours, and you know that the run's cooked, you're never going to get the time you want. What do you do then?
I think this is where some of the speedrunning community and culture comes in, because generally they're streaming or self-recording this so that they can upload it and prove it later. And they'll have almost like lap timers on the side. So there'll be certain markers in the game that they know if they reach this point with this time, it's not their best, or it is their best, or it's minus this from their best, almost so that they don't waste time. Because if speedrunners hate one thing, it's hate wasting time. And it's like, okay, I'm plus 5 seconds on this section. This isn't going to be a good run. Maybe they just stop there and reset and do it again.
Maybe. Some of these ones that take a lot of skill have low percentage chances of getting through a section well, getting through it cleanly. Or sometimes the game relies on, they call it RNG, random number generation. So certain things moving randomly within the game sometimes will be favorable and sometimes not. And that can be the limiting factor for a lot of runs. If you get bad RNG, then you're toast. You've got to start again. But I think we're beginning to get into what the life of a speedrunner actually looks like, because from what I could see, pretty much an entry requirement to be a competitive one, to be in the top 10, you have to really commit to it. And runners will sometimes grind a game for hours a day, months at a time, sometimes even years, grinding a level sometimes, maybe even a 30-second level to get it as perfect as they can before they actually manage to set a world record. And the deeper you seem to commit to this lifestyle, the more you let it consume you, the more rewarding it gets and the closer you get to achieving your goal. It's an awful lot of time spent doing very similar stuff.
It is. And I guess maybe that brings out the kind of obsessive tendencies, or that might bring us into why do people do it if you're already inclined to that side of your personality. I want to do this thing until it's the most optimized it can possibly be. But it does seem like in that community, people pick one or a handful of games and that's their thing. It's not like, oh, I'm going to have a go at Sonic this week and Mario. Maybe I'll pick up Skyrim a bit later. You don't drop casually into speedrunning a game. You kind of pick your game, hopefully one that you already like, and you play it and you play it and you play it and you play it.
You play it until you don't like it anymore, and then you keep playing it because, well, that's what you've decided.
That's what I was expecting to find, but I'm surprised that a lot of them still say that they pick this game because they love the game and they still love it after speedrunning it. Maybe because of the new possibilities that you find from knowing a level so well or knowing a game so well.
It must be kind of cool discovering a new aspect of a game that you thought you knew perfectly. Like, that, oh, there's still things that can surprise me. That must be fun. I think there's something cool in a weird sort of way about, for instance, people playing Doom now. Maybe who actually played it when it was released in the 90s. You know, someone's been playing this game for 30 years, and dedicated to optimizing levels within it. And it's just a really, from the outside, it seems like a really bizarre thing to dedicate yourself to. But there's a sort of meditative or monk-like devotion to this that I kind of admire in a weird sense, in a weird way.
I think that's maybe a feeling that some of them are chasing, where the muscle memory kicks in from having played that game so much. And the website withatherriblefate.com had quite a nice quote about it, is that speedrunners perform tricks, exploits, glitches, and make precise movements that often require frame-perfect inputs to pull off these runs. It's a certain level of dedication. And some of the ones they interviewed kind of alluded to, if I get in my own head too much while I'm playing the game, I know for a fact I'm going to fuck it up. I kind of almost have to go with the flow and get in the zone, and that's when I've done some of my best times.
Chase that flow state. I've heard people talk about that. Do you know about flow state?
Enlighten me. Blow my mind.
Blow something else. But first, I'll blow your mind.
Wait,
legend. Flow state. Do you ever get so consumed in a task that you're doing, like, I don't know, writing a story or writing a bit of code or building some furniture or just something like that, that you kind of get absorbed in the task and time goes by without even noticing, and it's quite an enjoyable state to be in where you're not really conscious of yourself. Your self-awareness dissipates for a bit and you're just totally absorbed in what you're doing. Does that sound familiar at all? Like when you're wanking.
Dismembering a human corpse, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, I've seen you do it. He's totally glazed over.
I think that I had some of that when, it wasn't for speedrunning purposes, but just a couple of us would play games at university and we actually managed to get two really crappy TVs and put them next to each other in the living room. So one person would be on one console, one person was on the other. And you are engaged in the game that you are playing, but also holding a conversation with the other person and you're talking absolute shit to each other. Like, it's just meaningless nonsense and in-jokes. But you're in such a flow that the conversation doesn't matter and kind of the game becomes muscle memory as well. So I think I understand. I think I get it.
Maybe it's a bit like that. But it's quite a nice state to be in. I think people universally enjoy flow state. I get it sometimes mountain biking. If you're just absorbed in the track and you're not too tired and worried about falling off, you're just kind of living in the moment, man.
Sounds very surfer mentality. Ride the wave.
Surfers would probably know about flow state, I think. But I think the kind of person that does this, we're kind of building a picture here. You've got to be happy doing repetitive tasks over and over. Maybe a bit of an obsessive. Maybe a bit of an obsessive mindset.
Perhaps you're a bit obsessive and might be considering a career as a speedrunner, young man.
Don't. Drop out. Do teaching instead. Don't do teaching.
Summon it all up in one moment for the perfect run, McLeod.
You can see there's a certain kind of person that this might appeal to.
Are we going to say autistics? No, bad, Andrew, bad. Banned.
Yeah,
Cancel culture.
I think that's highly represented in the speedrunning culture. It down to the detail, obsession, and tiny optimizations. It totally fits the typical autist mindset.
Maybe. I got some of that talking about VR chat. That was a lot of people hanging around saying, yeah, all of us are a bit autistic, man. I think maybe even people claiming it as a label is overused. It doesn't necessarily have to be a diagnosed mental condition. It's just people that have got an obsessive side to their personality. Humans always want to go faster somehow, running, driving cars, racing horses, forcing your dog to run round a circle. Like, people want to do things quicker somehow.
Mm.
Did you check out any games in particular on speedrun.com? Like, just, it was kind of fascinating to dive into that as a community. And what do people actually speedrun as parts of these games? Not just start to finish, but what are the smaller topics? Look at any of those?
I did. And I was forced to conclude, I guess I'm not really a gamer anymore, because 90% of the games in the leaderboard that people were speedrunning, I never heard of. Like, really, what the fuck game is this? And I looked some of them up, and a lot of them are modern games done in an old style. Just really obscure things. But yeah, there are a couple more classic ones I'm familiar with. Doom. I kind of focused my research on Doom, 90s Doom, and Minecraft, which I always type Mincecraft for some reason, which is a different kind of game. And
Freudian slip.
And
you fucking mincer.
Mincing around. And Trekmania is the other one. But
Trekmania. 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 No.
Again, it's one of these ones which is basically built for speedrunning. It's a racing game.
Okay. Racing games do seem like they would fit it, but they weren't actually coming at the top ones. The ones that the articles talked about were like Doom and Ocarina of Time. But I wanted to see if any of the chill games that I've played recently were up there, and just what else was hanging around the top of the leaderboards. But that led me to one called Neon White, which seems like it was a game made a few years ago that was absolutely built to like trigger speedrunners. The whole point of the game is to go fast, and it's almost like, we're challenging you, come on, what's the best you can do? Can you get -1, you fucking pussy? But it's like a first person shooter traversal game where your items or guns are single use, and you can swap them instead for some kind of traversal mechanic, like a double jump or something like that.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And did the community pick up on it, or did it just get sidelined?
I didn't actually see it coming up in the leaderboards. I saw some people doing reviews for it and saying, oh, this game is insane for speedrunners. But no, some of the stuff that was popping up again and again in searches was like the classic Mario's Doom and stuff. I thought it was really funny when I logged on the first time. One of the ones that just said like recently completed was called Tomodachi Life, which is a really kind of bland Nintendo cozy game, I think from like 2013 or something, where you get a little village going. There's like fishing mini games.
It's a Nintendo game then.
Yeah, but the record for this that was popping up and like recently completed was Marriage in 6 minutes and 37 seconds.
Something your average speedrunner may not achieve as quickly in real life.
Yeah, I can get it in a video game, but in real life, forever alone.
Do you speedrun relationships?
Or Portal? You probably play Portal, right?
I have played Portal. It's a great game.
I think it's universally held up as a great game. Physics, puzzles, and stuff like that. But that's also quite popular in the speedrunning community, apparently. I looked at what the rules are for, I don't know, the specific version of running Portal. Like, you had to have this, as you said before, patch 1.something-something, no scripts or macros. Has to be one sitting. You can quick save if you want, but that time is counted, and so the run counts from the appearance of the crosshair to when it disappears at the ends after you kill X character. Want to guess what the speed run record is for something like Portal?
So if I recall correctly, Portal's not a terribly long game. I think it took me maybe 4 or 5 hours when I played it to complete it. So applying what I know about speedrunners, I'm gonna say half an hour.
Sub 30 is definitely possible. 6 minutes, 2 seconds.
I have to look some of these up. They're worth looking up, listeners. You should find at least a few top-level speedruns of games that you know, and your mind will be blown that humans can even do this. Some of the precision involved, or unlikelihood, or it just looks like a different game sometimes. But when you do this, something I found was if I watched just a video of someone's record speedrun, like from speedrun.com, and without any kind of commentary, it didn't make any sense to me. Sometimes I would notice something weird had happened, but I didn't really understand enough about the game or the mechanics or the history of the glitches, etc., to know which parts were significant. But there are quite a few YouTube pundits like Carl Jobst, who's very well known. He's a speedrunner himself and YouTuber, and Virtual. These guys are really good, and they can kind of walk you through the history of it and the context, and it turns something that is basically just a video of someone playing a game in a weird way into an actually meaningful and enjoyable experience for the viewer.
Carl Jobst is also kind of a speedrunning debunker, isn't he?
Yes.
There's some of his videos talking about like how this is clearly a fake run, or how this person who held the world record was easily identifiable as a cheat or something like that.
Definitely. There's speedrunning is mired in scandal with people cheating left and right at pretty much every game, as far as I can tell. And maybe it's a cognitive bias, but it seems like more than half the content is cheaters getting busted.
Maybe that's entertainment. Once you take a break from speedrunning, is to watch other people get absolutely shut down for faking what is rightfully yours.
These fake records can last for a couple of years or longer sometimes before people... I mean, these are the exact wrong people that you would try to trick. The sort of obsessively detail-oriented nerds who know every single mechanic of the game. It's quite difficult to cheat on these games, and it's extremely difficult to cheat convincingly. So a lot of the time, the cheaters manage to get the smart stuff right, but they get caught out on the really stupid, mundane details, like the fake time they submitted didn't have a zero at the beginning, when the game always outputs times with zeros at the beginning. Just stupid shit like that that point to, oh, hang on, this can't be generated by the game, this must be doctored. Or like the rain animation changes every 5 frames, and in this video it changes a different number of every frames because it's a spliced video or something like that. And these sort of tiny details tend to catch people out.
I did see one of those. It was from like a Mexican streaming channel that was saying, oh, here's one of our popular streamers is going to do a run as fast as possible in Mario. And I don't know if it was Carl Jobst or someone else that just took it apart completely, in that they'd taken what had been a tech-assisted speed run, and they were just claiming this guy was controlling it by putting a little video of him with a fake heart rate monitor on the side and putting a fake recorded time next to it. But the detail they went into to why this speed run was wrong and clearly wasn't right, like, they hadn't just taken copy of the video and played it as their own. They had changed the top row where the score is kept or the timer is kept with something else. So the fact that the coins were flashing out of time between the scoreboard and where the character picks up the coins in the game was a massive obvious giveaway for them and stuff like this, yeah. But he was also saying, your man Carl there, that the better the speedrunner, the more convincing fake they'd be able to make, which is why some of the ones that set world records are genuine speedrunners who have then, I don't know, fallen to the dark side and created these fake videos because they know what looks good and what doesn't and what would be accepted.
A lot of the time, the people busting the cheaters are cheaters themselves, which isn't always obvious at the time. And later it turns out they were cheating too.
I knew he was fucking your wife because I've also been fucking your wife. Like
there was one guy that was submitting very fast Trackmania times, and people were a bit suspicious of him. And one of the things he revealed about himself was that, you know, I just work full time. I play Trackmania in my spare time. I've got a wife and a kid at home. And I thought, he's giving it away right there. This man's clearly a liar because this story doesn't add up. Yeah. No, sir, you don't have time to have a full-time job and a family and be a competitive speedrunner. There's no way.
Speedrunner claiming to have a wife and family? Busted. Fake news. Fake, 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 fake.
From that point, all you've got to do is actually just prove that he's cheating because it's obvious that they're...
I guess this probably leads us into if there is a dark side to this community, because by and large, it didn't seem to be as dark as some of the other ones we'd covered, but... if there was a negative side to it, I think it was an article on Medium.com covered some of this, it would be how protective they are and maybe this culture of drama and pitchforks over cheating.
I think there's quite a significant dark side, actually. I think at the beginning of the dark side, which kind of leads into why do people cheat at all, especially people that are good speedrunners, why do they cheat? I think there's a kind of feedback loop where if you're the number one in a category for a small number of dedicated fans who care about that category, you're a big deal. You've got status, you've got respect. You can be a titan of the game and an absolute nobody in real life. And when someone knocks you off that top spot, or maybe you fall off completely from, I don't know, it's only really the top couple of times that anyone cares about. If you fall out of that top 10, then you're no one again. It's not like the community comes and asks you how you are. They've moved on to whoever's in the top three this time. So there's a pretty powerful incentive there to cheat to get back to the top of the leaderboards to get your status back when you were someone.
I don't know. Some of the articles I was reading were saying that it's quite a collaborative community. So when they talked about someone discovering the first exploit or something opening up in Ocarina of Time, keep going back to it as an example, because that's what the article was using, that it was like they call themselves speedrun researchers or game glitch researchers. They all want to jump on it, but not so that they can make their own runs quicker, but so that they can tell everyone, oh, if you go through this bit at this time, this it will cut this mountain off, or you don't have to do this level like that. And it seemed like while they wouldn't come and say, oh, it's a real shame that someone took your record, all the tools are there that there'll be 50 people that want to help you, like, oh, here's the latest exploits we've found for getting back on top.
So that's quite cool that you can participate in the community without actually having to grind billions of hours into perfecting a 30-second level over and over. You can contribute as a technology finder or creator.
But those people are also grinding those hours. Like, you don't find the 3-pixel wide gap that your character fits through when they shouldn't in a wall without spending some time rubbing your face on every wall in the game.
And combing through lines of code. That's true. And there's another kind of contributor, which again doesn't actually have to be putting up competitive times, is the forensic scientist who helps bust cheaters or verify runs. So that's another way people can participate. The incentive to cheat is one dark side, and also the incentive to commit more and more of your life to this is another. And some people stream to kind of fund their speedrunning, and their day looks like waking up, grinding a level while streaming all day, and then just repeating this and hoping they make enough money from their stream to fund themselves. And the stream is their contact with the outside world. It's incredibly, you know, you don't even have to leave your house to do this.
Yeah, this WithATerribleFate.com article was talking about the kind of mental game of speedrunning and said it's a chimera of different aspects of competition. Not only are you competing with other players, not so much because it's usually a single player endeavor to run this thing the fastest time. You're therefore competing with yourself, which you can never really get away from. And you're competing with the game itself, but the human factors of fatigue, your focus, your nerves, your burnout, anything that you're going to do from doing the same activity over and over and over. So there's a certain degree of mental strain that would go into doing this kind of task or this hobby.
And remember, if you're not suffering from depression, sleep deprivation and repetitive strain injury, you're a casual. Get out.
Yeah.
You're not even trying.
Alexander Toftness, which is the most
a man's
stuck
name.
Up name I came across. He's a blogger. He talked about the psychology of speedrunning, and he interviewed a couple of them. And they said that depression and anxiety are pretty common in the community, but they did note that that has a correlation with heavy video game use anyway. Yeah. And then, as you've said, a kind of loop of aversion to social contact outside of that community and just getting obsessed with doing the same task inside that game over and over and over.
Some people don't stream. Some people just submit records anonymously and no one knows who they really are, what they look like, and they like it that way.
I saw that the other negative side seemed to be a pushback from the rest of the gaming community because, I mean, computer gaming, it's still, I guess, a subculture in society, but it's a massive one now. It's not got any kind of nerdy stigma attached that might have been if you were obsessive about Pac-Man in the 80s or something.
Yeah.
But there's this kind of negative pushback from people who like specific games and feel that speedrunning hurts or ruins the game itself, and maybe even inside the speedrunning community, the subculture of that certain exploits ruin the game even for speedrunners. One good example cited was GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64 when it came out, that they found out that the lag and the frame rate drop is so low from just staring at the floor, because the console, the technology is not loading in any other textures and stuff, that you will get a much faster speed run if your character's camera only looks at the floor. So once you've mapped out where you're going, it's just like the response of the machinery will be so much quicker, so you just run through the game just staring at the floor.
I didn't see a problem with that as a speedrunner. If I was a speedrunner, perfect. Good strategy. Execute it well. But I don't know. How does the way someone else enjoy a game affect my enjoyment of a game? I don't know if I could say speedrunners would ruin a game for me. What would they have to do to ruin a game that I'm enjoying?
At least none of those demon characters are going to come after you in a, you know, post-Me Too culture saying that I fucked them. You were staring at the floor all the time. You're pretty safe.
I've literally never seen a woman.
Yeah.
In-game or otherwise.
I couldn't have been undressing your character with my eyes. I've only got eyes for the skybox because it's got the lowest frame rate.
Highest frame rate.
But sorry. Yes.
Jesus Christ, did you do any research?
Nah. This book's just full of wank stains.
Casual. It's covered in ectoplasm still. little shout back there.
Check out our episode on Ghost Hunters if you want to know what we're talking about there. The other, I guess, one that you mentioned before as well is that it can be quite intimidating and off-putting and therefore inaccessible to new players or people that have watched maybe some of these videos and think, I want to get involved in these, but other people have spent so much time already saturating the market, if you like, of these scoreboards, or they've got this inbuilt culture and lingo that it can feel kind of not gatekeepery. There's no one pushing you out, but it feels intimidating to try and join that.
Oh, totally. But the beauty is you can do it anonymously. And for a lot of people, a lot of speedrunners are casuals. Most people obviously can't chase top 10 spots, but there's enjoyment to be had in improving yourself in your own times, a bit of dedication, a bit of seeking perfection sometimes. You know, this is all good positive stuff.
The self-improvement was one of the key words that was coming across when people have polled or done research on why do people speedrun games? Why do you do it? And like 33% of them had the keyword fun in their response. I think it was just a survey of about 80 people. So there's a good portion of people that are responding feeling they are speedrunners, saying that it's fun for them. And then another smaller percentage, maybe 14 or something like that, was saying self-improvement. They like the idea of continuing to do something until you get better and better and better at it. And I guess I found that quite positive in terms of how, if I had to step back a bit, we've got kind of a throwaway culture now. And you've mentioned the fact that we digitally download games now. It's so easy to, like every time you log on to your PC, you could be downloading and playing a completely new PC game. It's so saturated. There's so much out there. But speedrunning almost gives games, it doesn't have to be a 30-year-old game. It could be one that no one's doing right now, but it gives them a new lease of life and a certain replayability. It's not just, oh, I've beaten that game, that's finished, I'll go and download a new one tomorrow. It's like, okay, how much quicker? How many seconds can I shave off my time? Oh, I think I did a wall jump there. Can I get through this bit quicker? And if you like that game, that suddenly increased the replayability and how long you're going to stick with it, which I guess is kind of nice in a way.
Yeah, it's nice to have to part with more money every month to buy something new if you keep getting enjoyment from something. Whilst we can still own games rather than just lease them, which I'm sure the suits on Wall Street have wanking themselves into a stupor about. Get them all on subscriptions.
Live streaming services.
Mm. Just remember, kids, if buying isn't owning, piracy isn't stealing.
Oh, there's a tagline for a t-shirt that I'll make myself in my basement while I'm loading up my guns.
That's exactly what it's intended for. I didn't come up with that. Unfortunately, I wish I did.
If you're the first one to trademark it, then you did. Einstein knew about that, worked in the patent office, didn't invent shit.
That is an interesting coincidence, isn't it? I've always wondered about that. So some of the things I've got in my notes here, another interesting comparison is, I think it's quite like being a professional athlete and in the same... It is.
There's only so long I could keep up with these fat, greasy pricks like me. They're sitting in their basement going like, oh, yeah, for the three mouthfuls of Cheetos later. Look, I'm basically a professional athlete in my genre, you know.
Hear me out, though, in the sense that in order to be competitive, it requires quite a high degree of dedication. And, like, I've always wondered, people that lift weights at the Olympics, or say shot put, you've spent your entire life, more than likely if you're at the Olympics, dedicated to this one act, this one movement, where you pick up a piece of metal, spin around and throw it, and hope you can throw it further than anyone else can, due to a combination of genetics, training, coaching, diet, drug regime,
sleep physics,
schedule, physics,
the direction of the wind.
Yeah, all this stuff. And at the end of the day, even if you win, who really cares? You know, you know, throwing a shot put, yeah, if someone told me they were a gold medal shot putter, I don't know, whatever they are, then I'd be impressed for about 15 seconds and then I'd forget. Well, maybe I'd probably ask them a few questions about, you know, how did you achieve that? But at the end of the day, it doesn't. Do you get what I'm saying? It's not helpful.
I'd probably be like, wow, would you tug my dick right off if you gave me a hand job? And then that'll be that.
Spin me around. But yeah, speedrunning is kind of the same. It's like, you might be a titan in this category and 100 other speedrunners and 10,000 YouTube audience members revere your name. Shout out to my boy Demon Lord. an early titan of Doom speedrunning.
Is that a real one? You're actually giving a shout out to someone called Demon Lord.
Demon Lord, yeah. He was eventually surpassed by Looper and then later by Zero Master, but there you go. I love the names they have. Demon Lord, he's the man. And he was rocking in the 90s he was doing his stuff, and he would have been rocking a mechanical mouse with a fucking ball in it. None of this laser pointer stuff. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. The point is, do you see some of the comparisons between speedrunners and professional athletes, this sort of extreme dedication it takes to compete at the top? And ultimately, under many metrics, it's kind of pointless, although you do have a legacy to show for it, maybe.
No, I get you. You're right, because if you met these people in the street and you'd look at them and think, wow, weird looking fuck that person is, assuming you did think that, and they told you, I'm actually the number one speedrunner for Doom in the entire world, and I have been for 5 years, I'd be like, great. I'm fairly sure I could still steal your wallet if I wanted to.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? That's a good party fact. But after about 5 or 10 minutes of conversation, you probably never go back to it.
Yeah, you probably realize that doesn't really make me want to interact with you anymore.
No.
And that's not like my measure of how I interact with the world, by the way. Like some Nelson from The Simpsons bully metric. Like, can I steal your wallet is the ultimate, like how I rate you as a human.
Yeah, curious that's where your mind went.
But I just assume they'd be quite bullyable as people. But having met Olympic standard athletes just out in public, I'm talking about Adam Ondra at the climbing center, right? And that's in his own element as well. But if you passed him on the street, you'd be like, that's a gangly looking motherfucker, and that would be it.
That man is 80% neck. He's got neck for days.
But that's a very, very niche sport that he's in. If you're not sure, audience, that is climbing, bouldering, and lead climbing, I think he does as well.
Yeah, and like anything, within the community, he's a titan.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, incidentally, you would not be able to steal the wallet from. That man's grip strength is inhuman.
I'm pretty sure he's not gripping it through the pocket of his shorts, that would be all right.
Can you imagine, though, chasing, say, shot putting, that being your life from... The bar keeps getting higher and higher for these things. In the 50s, you could be a fairly competitive athlete part-time. You know, if you had some talent for whatever it was, you could still compete at a reasonable level. Nowadays, if you want to compete at the highest levels, you know, you need to be committing to that sport from age 3.
We're getting into Gattaca territory. Your parents have had to genetically engineer you for this sport and then get you into it as soon as you're cognitively able to stand or something.
Yeah, Olympians at the highest level have all of that has to line up, or you don't get a seat at the table.
So don't worry, listeners, if you're not quite at that level, you can always be a speedrunner.
Well, not necessarily.
Do you think there are physical things that hold you back from being a speedrunner?
Maybe mental as much as physical. Maybe timing or spatial awareness, or it's probably just a tolerance for repetition as much as anything else. Some hand-eye coordination involved with analog sticks and things like that. So I imagine there is a genetic
element to it. I come from a long line of speedrunners.
My father was an analog stick twiddler, and I'm an analog stick twiddler. My son will be an analog stick twiddler. His son, we've disowned because he's got into the niche dark side of speedrunning, which is playing other games with a Guitar Hero controller.
Oh, that's not acceptable at all.
It's actually a thing. I found the, like, taking like NES titles or anything really, anything people can speedrun, but also playing it with a Guitar Hero input.
I've seen stuff that isn't Guitar Hero guitar at all. It's just used as a controller for like Halo or something.
Yeah, yeah, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, watching a speedrun of that with someone playing it with a Guitar Hero controller.
People would do anything. If you want to be a successful speedrunner, you can do it. Pick a game that you're kind of good at, and then preferably one that's obscure, and then find a really, really niche category, because there's so many subdivisions to this that it's not exactly a saturated market, that there will be a category that has hardly anyone submitting a time for it. You can go out there and do that. You could probably find something. Grind it for a few hours, figure out a strategy, set a world record in a very, very specific way.
I guess that's maybe the difference between aiming to be an elite level footballer, huge crowd, lot of money, lot of people interested in it, that'll be your top game, as opposed to learning or wanting to be the best at shining shoes in a particular square footage of London.
Yeah. Exactly. And the only difference between being a professional footballer and being a top speedrunner is being a professional footballer is socially sanctioned. That has social value, which is why they make so much money, because loads of people watch the games, they care a lot, they buy the strip, etc. Because football is culturally accepted, or culturally required, you could even say, and speedrunning is a totally fringe thing. There's nothing intrinsically more valuable about being a professional footballer or the game of football than there is about the discipline of speedrunning, or being a speedrunner, in my opinion. It's just entirely arbitrary where society places its value.
I guess so. And I guess that with the rise of esports in general, which is people competitively playing video games against each other in general, that will be, I mean, how the games are intended to be. But there are competitions, I don't know if they're televised or what, but there are now fairly well-known competitions in the speedrunning community where people get together and play these for big competitions, right?
Yeah, there's the biggest one, I think, is called Games Done Quick, which has been running since 2014, if I recall correctly, which every year raises around $1 million for something.
Various charity. I think they pick a charity and they donate it to a charity.
Right, gotcha. Yeah. See, that's cool. And that's an actual in-person event, because most of the time speedrunning seems to take place on the internet in a very anonymized, digitized way. A little bit less so if you're a streamer, but still very much internet-based. But Games Done Quick brings them together into some convention hotel where games are played in real time by top players. World records are often set there, and it brings a bit of spectacle to it.
And maybe that's how you feel like a professional footballer, if you can go and speedrun Kirby's Dream Land on the Game Boy.
To an audience of literally dozens of people.
Dozens of people with tens of dollars of prize money.
Yeah, with odd battered looking sofas to sit on and a rather murky looking carpet, but you know,
and some lumpy misshapen humans that will throw their shirts at you.
Well, hang on. Well, some of them are very skinny because they're malnourished.
I can't get to the fridge and back with the snack in less than 30 seconds. It's not optimal. I'm not bothering.
How do I glitch this?
Can I get through my wall to get to the fridge quicker?
That's not fair. Plenty of speedrunners are just normal-looking people. It's not fair to tar them all with that brush.
I think I used the word natty somewhere when I was doing my notes here, almost like a throw. In a glitchless run, you're natty. The throwback to arm wrestling for you.
Yeah, enjoyed that. I've also noticed that it's overwhelmingly male, this subculture. And I think I looked into a little bit about why that might be. There are women that feature, but they tend to become famous for being involved in scandals.
One of the early speedrunners that was posting under the name, I want to say Chris, I would have to go and find the article now, I didn't write it down, but she was a bit like we said in toxic gaming culture chat, that women will hide their identities in gaming because there's always been a bit of a stigma around it because it's traditionally been a male-dominated space. But she had been heavily involved in this kind of demo culture from the early Doom speedruns, but was always posting under what was assumed to be a male name.
Mm, probably wise.
Sidebar.
I think early speedrun internet gaming culture, as you say, was male-dominated and quite unwelcoming to women. I think maybe we were a bit more misogynistic in that time. Or if they were welcoming to women, it was also could be in a creepy way, because you've probably seen that in real life playing a game. Someone logs in with a girl's name and the simps come out of the woodwork and basically ruin it for them.
What does it mean, simp?
We'll have to cover this in another episode. So a simp, I've heard it means sucker idolizing mediocre pussy. But the reality of that is basically people, men, almost always fawning over women on the internet, usually women on the internet, but you can simp in real life, who they've got no chance of being with, and just generally putting them on a pedestal, debasing themselves, maybe giving them free shit, giving them tons of attention and getting nothing in return.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's quite rife if you've ever played an MMO. If you want some free shit, all you have to do is make your character female.
Really? Mm. Yeah, simping is absolutely rampant. So one of the only women I came across was called Queen Pones a Lot. Great name. Shout out to you. And she became, I believe, more famous for doing a blindfolded run, or a blindfolded boss fight in a game called Monster Hunter. Although she was accused of cheating because it was basically impossible to do. Although blindfold speedrunning is also a category. And she did it again with a better blindfold and some other countermeasures, but also got busted for answering stuff in the chat that she shouldn't have been able to read if she was blindfolded. And
this is so fucking ridiculous.
So stupid, yeah. And yeah, that was a Carl Jobs video expose on her. There was another famous cheater, Billy Mitchell, maybe the most famous game cheater of all time. Have you heard of him? The King of Kong? Anyway, this guy set some record, allegedly, for Donkey Kong back in the 90s, or maybe even late 80s. It was implausible, and then later debunked as impossible, I think, and there's a documentary on it called The King of Kong, which is worth watching, but he's stuck to his guns for a long time that he's the greatest gamer of all time.
If you say it enough times, it becomes true.
Yeah, he's a bit of a sad case, really. But one thing I thought was interesting as well with, again, the professional athlete crossover is, what if you commit to all of this and you don't get the rewards? What if you never quite make it? You do all these things right, but your genetic lottery or training regime or whatever just isn't quite there, and you only become, you know, you only go to the Commonwealth Games and come eighth in your category, and that's the peak of your achievement, or you only end up ranking 101st in your category of choice, and you might have spent, in the case of athletes, your entire life reaching that moment, and you don't even get the payoff of the status or the legacy. How does that feel, do you think?
You think that relates to speedrunners in, I've just sunk 30 hours of my life into this 30-second level, and yet I can't even get near the top spot. Is that what you're getting at?
Kind of, but 30 hours is rookie numbers. You need to get those numbers up. 30 hours is, I'd say, probably less than the entry requirements to begin taking speedrunning seriously. Sometimes they have thousands or tens of thousands of hours on specific, just single levels. So, but yeah, forget that. Just replace that with, you spent 1,000 hours, maybe say an entire year of your free time dedicated to achieving a record, and you don't do it, you don't come close.
Isn't that just a micro study of human life in general? You know, what if you wanted to be a lawyer but you're never quite good enough, or you couldn't get into the right school? What if you wanted to be an actor and you end up making a shit podcast on the internet that four people listen to, you
know? Losers, unlike us.
All that is distilling down the elements of disappointment into a single activity. Like, maybe it actually is a good thing, and it lets people build up a mental endurance, having to come to terms with not being the best, or that competitive edge to push yourself, but also accept defeat and gracefully say, you know what, that person just had it on the day and I didn't, rather than become a little bubble of rage and frustration, because no one's life is going to go 100% perfectly and they're going to get everything that they ever wanted. And why should your hobby or the thing that you spent a lot of time on be any different? In the majority of cases, not everyone is going to win a gold medal at what they try.
The idea that as a cis, straight, white man, that I wouldn't get everything I wanted in life is offensive to me, frankly.
that's like having to take the red pill of the Matrix or something.
How dare you? That's for other people. Other people can not get what they want in life. Any year now, I'm sure it's all start going my way. It has to, right?
One of these years, I'm going to actually, you know, bother to enter Wimbledon, and then I can't wait for the trophy. I'm going to look really good in those whites.
I remember when we were 15, my friend Dan, in an offhand comment, said, well, you know, of course Federer is good at tennis. He plays it all the time. If I spent every hour of my day playing tennis, then I could beat Federer. And he said, Dan, you're saying you could beat Federer, the most gifted tennis player of all time, if you just trained a lot? Are you sure you don't want to back down from that statement? And he doubled down on it and said, of course I could.
And I'm with him. No, I'm with Dan.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I think dedication.
How are you going to beat Federer, you fat sack
time
of shit?
Time spent. Maybe if I start training, I won't be such a fat sack of shit.
Put down that beer.
I wish I had a beer.
Do explain how you'll beat Federer.
I do think that you should put mental barriers on yourself and suddenly dismiss that you could do anything. I think if you want to set that as your goal, why not do it? Why not say that to yourself and use it to train and train and train and train and train? Maybe you can do it.
When you're just arguing for a bit of realism here about accepting that you can't do these things, I suppose you could do both, right? Accept that you're not going to beat Federer, but nonetheless act as if you intend to.
I guess I was saying that you shouldn't necessarily expect everything to fall into your lap, but there's a certain positive quality in knowing that you, or thinking that you have the ability to at least give it a good go.
Yeah, I think that's mature. I think knowing that you're not going to be the best at something is not a reason to not do it. There is value in the trying, in the getting better, in the learning. Even if you don't do any of those things, just simply value in the enjoyment of the act. There's a quote here I think is applicable from Theodore Roosevelt. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with the cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat.
Exactly. Exactly why I was saying, except slightly less eloquent.
But yeah, it's worth actually trying something, even if you fail.
Yeah, I think you should remove your mental barriers, at least have a try, and tell yourself...
Free your mind, man.
Tell yourself that you can do it. Well, that's exactly the message from the first Matrix, the good Matrix.
The only Matrix. It's a shame they never made any sequels.
You are the barrier to you achieving things if you immediately say, like, I can't do that.
I do think there's a limit to that. Like, it is too late for me to be an astronaut. It just is.
That's provably not true.
What, if I become a billionaire and buy my way onto a Virgin Galactic?
There you go. That's the speedrunning route.
I suppose I could probably actually afford a ticket if I sold every single one of my assets. So maybe I just don't want it enough.
Here you go. Now you're thinking like a speedrunner. You've got to hack the system. You've got to think, what's the shortest path I can take here?
Total commitment.
I guess if I had to round it out to closing thoughts, that it is a subculture of computer gaming, which, as I said, is massive in itself. It's already a subculture. And I do think it mirrors pretty normal patterns of human behavior, in that you want to do something faster and you want to take something to the extreme. And I quite like, as I said, that it gives games the kind of replayability in Second Life that they might not necessarily have had from speedrunning. It does inevitably bring out obsessive tendencies in people that are already prone to them. Like, once you discover speedrunning and find that there's a whole community that encourage you to smash your head against it again and again and again and again and again.
Encouraged by people that might not participate themselves at all, who just want the entertainment.
Yep, or they are there to facilitate you, like your speedrunning dealers, in feeding you the glitches that they found. Oh, mate, no, just on the down low between you and me, like, at 8:05, you could have glitched through that wall, just saying. That's the darker side. Like, it's going to bring out negative sides of people's personalities if they get into it and they're already prone to it. But largely, it doesn't really seem to be a fully toxic culture. They don't want people in there are going to try and exploit them, but they also support each other. And I came across something called completion bias, which I guess might be a part of it. And that is the drive that human beings have to finish something, that an unfinished task kind of eats away at your mind. So you need to want to complete it as quickly as possible.
God, I need to get some completion drive in my life.
And I think there's maybe an element of that, but there's also possibly also evolutionary biology in this urge to compete in general, which mm-hmm. I don't find. I think I would probably be some kind of bottom feeding carp if I had to regress. I don't have a competitive edge in me. But beyond just competing for resources and to be stronger, better, and actually survive, there's also the social factors of desire for dominance and achievement, which is ultimately the only thing these speedrunners are going to get from it.
Especially if you're not physically gifted, computer games gives you an avenue to still feed that drive.
It's a bit more of an equal playing field than your shot putter or your footballer.
Mm. I would add to that dark side summation that some of the big streamers, there's this guy called Dream who's got 30 million subscribers, which is insane. He's a big Minecraft player. And he was posting world records for various things, but also posted world records cheating runs as well as legitimate ones. And he got exposed and he had this kind of personality cult around him. And a lot of his followers simply refused to believe the astronomical luck that he was getting, which was the main evidence for him fiddling the game. And I think that when people have such a high number of followers, I think they are heavily incentivized to keep feeding the tiger and do more things that get more views and get more engagement. And if you're slipping off the leaderboard, getting back on by cheating is a way you can do that. And I think a lot of the time, bad PR is better than no PR, to quote the old maxim. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's interesting to note that I think speedrunning actually thrives on scandal. I think it drives a lot more traffic to the videos than simply uploading fast runs of stuff. The sort of half-hour documentaries of how cheaters were busted. The community needs people to cheat, and it needs people to bust them. And the people actually doing God's work of putting in faster and faster runs are actually a smaller part than you'd think of the whole community. So the scandal part is really interesting as an observer. Is it bad? I don't know. People cheat all the time and everything. So is it something that should be eradicated? I don't know, but the community actually needs it, which is interesting, in my opinion.
How do you think they need it to draw people in, or to almost to make the gatekeepers of the community actually stay active and keep it pure?
Because I think there's something delicious about cheaters getting caught, which people in the mainstream, normies, can enjoy. And you might get pulled into watching a video about the biggest cheating scandal in a video game, because that's intuitively interesting. Whereas you might not spend so much time marveling at a new 30-second Doom run of E1M5, because you don't even have the knowledge to know what that means, or why that's significant. But a pundit explaining how this cheater was forensically dismantled by a bunch of anoraks. By a bunch of boffins, yeah. We've not asked the big question.
Firstly, is this something you would be into? Could you get into it?
No, I need novelty much more than I can tolerate repetitiveness. I get the chasing perfection. I get the optimization, the strategization. That all appeals to me, but just simply putting in that grind hours and hours, no, I couldn't do it.
So that's why, I mean, you make me wear the clown costume when I come over.
Yep, I need novelty every time. Honka honka.
I wish it didn't have a flap at the back, though.
What about you? Is this something you'd be interested in?
I thought about it, and the answer I came back to was I'm just too fucking lazy. Just no.
Are there any parts that appeal to you about it?
No.
Nothing.
Just a plan.
What about the money, the women, the cars, any of that?
Yeah, none of that, because it doesn't exist. I guess I've picked up a lot of games and put them down, and like maybe played the first level of something and never gone back to it.
Got ourselves a gamer here, boys.
I guess I can almost understand why they're doing it. I wouldn't want to put the time into it. It doesn't really seem like there's anything I would want to get out of it. There doesn't feel like there's a proper sense of achievement, even from completing a game, in doing this.
What about the eternal legacy of one line of computer text representing
on a website that will be web replaced in a week's time?
Yeah, what about that? That's forever, man. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the mindset for it.
I can't wait to disappear into the dust of history and be completely forgotten.
There's a sort of poetry to that, I think.
You want to round us out?
Is it sexual?
Yeah.
Is it? Go on. State your claims, sir.
Personally, sir, I've been beating off this entire time. Nothing is not sexual to me.
I think you'd have to really work at it with this. I don't think anyone in the community is having sex. They're too busy. Yeah. No, there's obviously plenty of speedrunners. I know we've painted them as kind of basement-dwelling recluses, but I'm sure plenty of them have normal lives, often as programmers and partners and kids and these kind of things, although surely the most dedicated ones don't have these things cluttering up their lives.
Not if they're really dedicated. You've got the brain space for, you know, that particular frame of the Green Hill stage of Sonic 2 that you've got to hit to beat James Richards' record.
If you have any human relationships at all, you're probably considered a casual, I suspect.
You're not optimized. No, I'm sure there are people in the community that are perfectly normal, but as a topic, as a niche, as a subculture, There is nothing inherently sexual about speedrunning games. I'm going to say it definitively, and come at me in the comments if you want to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I have to completely agree on this one.
That's probably all the conclusions I have. Any last turds of wisdom you want to flush down the drain here?
I want to squeeze out into the bowl of knowledge. No, I'm good. I'm all dry, squeezed out.
Just dry heaving through the anus now. So that's your lot for speedrunners. If you feel inclined to pick up this as a hobby, as a subculture, then feel free to comment us on our socials and let us know that we inspired you to do so, or keep it to your fucking self.
Are you mad we butchered your favorite subculture? Flame us in the comments.
That's true. So you can comment at us that we'll probably read, and we will take it into consideration next time. Or will we? Won't we? I guess you'll have to comment and find out. You can get us on Twitter or X at SubSubCultPod, or you can find us on Reddit, our SubSubculture podcast. Thanks for securing that sweet domain for us, Joe. You can also find us on YouTube. We now have a YouTube channel where you can hear all these episodes with a lackluster video behind them, and that's the SubSubculture podcast as well. So leave us some comments. Tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, and how into speedrunning you are.
I also want to know what topics you think we should cover next. Are we dropping hints what we're doing in 2 weeks' time, Andrew?
Yeah, give us a spoiler. Spoiler warning. If you don't want to know what we're doing, stick a cast iron pot over your head and smash it with a wooden spoon for the next 2 minutes now.
So next time we have child beauty pageants.
That is going to be grim.
My preconceptions, I'll tell you right now, I think it's going to be grim as well.
Yeah, I don't feel great even before we go into it.
No, I'm very worried what we're going to find. Probably because I'm going to go out looking for it.
Okay, good. So that's it for the Subculture podcast for today. Join us next time for a potentially grim topic. And in the meantime, sub three is possible, so get on it.
You can do it.
Life is weird. People are weirder.
And we're just trying to make it through without ending up in straitjackets. Because how would we drink our wine?
I'm Pascal LaForest.
And I'm Selene Castrovilla. We're cousins, besties, and the voices behind Life in Jest, a podcast that tackles the strange, the dark, and the ridiculous.
With a healthy dose of sarcasm and whatever humor we can wring from the madness.
From true crime to pop culture to stories too bizarre to be fiction,
we're unpacking it all, one sip of wine at a time.
Follow Life in Jest wherever you get your podcasts.
Because honestly, we don't know what's coming out of our mouths next either.